Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on the City of Gary demolition project. Brandon Smith reports on Senator Joe Donnelly meeting with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. And Chris Nolte has a conversation about the upcoming Northwest Indiana Parent Celebration and Education Expo. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Updates. 3 years ago, prominent region attorney T. Edward Page eulogized his client and friend, Indiana Senator Sue Lansky, following the lawmaker's death from lung cancer. Sue Lansky died at age 77 in 2015 after serving 30 years in the state Senate. On Wednesday, the late senator's husband was arrested on allegations he shot Page, a longtime family friend, outside of the attorney's Hobart residence. The Times reports, sources said the 83-year-old Cedar Lake man being held in the shooting death of Page is William Lansky. Prosecutors have said they expect to charge the suspect Friday in the Wednesday shooting death of Page. According to authorities, Page had been working as an attorney for William Lansky in a civil case. Page, 64, a well-respected judge, attorney, and Hobart resident, had served as Sue Lansky's attorney. Investigators planned to attend Page's autopsy Thursday morning and were working with the Lake County Prosecutor's Office to file charges by Friday morning. The suspect had been welcomed onto the attorney's gated property with two of his daughters to collect unspecified documents Wednesday. Police responded about 11:45 a.m. Wednesday morning to Page's home in the 1200 block of West 4th Street after an off-duty police officer who lives nearby reported to Lake County Dispatch that he heard multiple shots, people screaming, and a person yelling for help. A second 911 caller reported a person had been shot at Page's property. Page's husband tackled and disarmed the suspect, and officers took the suspect into custody when they arrived. A firearm and other evidence were recovered from the scene. William Lansky served two terms on the Cedar Lake Town Council after voters swept him and other Republicans to power in the 2003 general election. He served on the council from 2004 to 2011. Page served as magistrate judge on the Lake Superior Court from October 1984 to December 2000 and continued to serve as a part-time judge through the state's senior judges program. Page also worked for the Lake County Public Defender's Office and had put in his letter of retirement Tuesday. He was expected to leave the office by the end of the month. Page recently told the Times he planned to spend more time working as a senior judge and teaching. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The private company running most of Indiana's lottery operations has generated a record profit this past year, but still falls short of its initial goal. Hoosier Lottery officials announced Tuesday that the lottery has transferred $306 million to state coffers for the recently ended fiscal year. That's about $6 million more than the minimum required under the state's lottery contract with IGT Indiana to avoid paying a shortfall. Exceeding the $300 million incentive net income threshold also earned IGT Indiana its first incentive payment under the 15-year contract. The company was paid $9.1 million. But the record-setting profit still wasn't enough to meet IGT Indiana's initial target of bringing in $410 million by the end of June. Lottery proceeds go toward police and firefighters' pensions and reducing auto excise taxes. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly met Wednesday with President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh for what the Hoosier lawmaker described as a, quote, wide-ranging conversation. Donnelly has received significant pressure from conservative groups to back Kavanaugh's nomination. The Indiana senior senator says he talked about Kavanaugh's record and his time served in the George W. Bush administration. The statement from Donnelly's office also specifically mentions three judicial issues the two discussed: president, health care, and judicial independence. Donnelly says he'll continue to review Kavanaugh's record and watch his confirmation hearing before he decides whether to back him. Mike Braun, Donnelly's Republican challenger in this year's election, demands Donnelly immediately announce his support for Kavanaugh. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The mayor of South Bend is pushing for a downtown relocation of a commuter railroad that runs between the northern Indiana city and Chicago. Mayor Pete Buttigieg told the Common Council on Monday that he plans to pursue bringing the South Shore line downtown by 2025, despite the location's much costlier price. Buttigieg said, "South Bend residents at every level of our economic ladder would have more opportunities if the heart of our city was 90 minutes away by train from the heart of one of the most dynamic economic centers in the world." The city's redevelopment commission voted last year to spend $25 million in tax increment financing district property tax money to build a new station. The line currently ends at the station at South Bend International Airport on the city's north side. The mayor said bringing the train downtown would cost about $100 million, but the location is the option with the highest benefit. He goes on to say he's still unclear how he would fund the station. Buttigieg says BUILD grants, formerly known as Tiger grants, would be mobilized for something like this. Possibly other federal grants we haven't looked at, and the state has become an increasingly proactive economic partner. South Shore President Michael Nolan said he is considering the mayor's recommendation. Buttigieg said he will next hire a firm to study the design and engineering of a downtown route option. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. One in five American children has or will have a serious mental illness, and at least half of them won't get treatment. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, the Indiana Children's Commission wants every school district in the state to have personnel to help integrate what's called social-emotional learning into the classroom, essentially education that improves mental health.
Children spend more than 13,000 hours in their K-12 careers with educators, and the Children's Commission says districts need to address students' social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health. Hamilton County Systems of Care Assistant Director Terry Miller says each district should have staff dedicated to that task.
Just like we do reading and math, we make sure that we're all looking at that together as a district. How can we do that in a way that's effective for social, emotional learning and mental health?
Miller says districts should start with a common philosophy.
Many times, you know, we want to start jumping into what interventions are we going to do? What screening tool are we going to use? Well, we need to do that in a way that's sustainable by all having the same philosophy.
The Children's Commission also wants to explore funding opportunities to expand those services in school districts statewide. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Gun violence is now recognized as a public health issue in Indianapolis after the city council passed a non-binding resolution on Monday. Ahmad Moore came to support the proposal with his daughter and members of his church. He says violence is a real problem in the city.
If you don't be the change, if you don't make your voice heard, then you're basically saying that you agree with the way things are.
One of the counselors who introduced the proposal, Lakeisha Jackson, is a victim of gun violence herself. She says violence spreads like an infection.
If gun violence isn't a health issue, why are so many people dying?
And Jackson says many of those that aren't killed suffer lifelong consequences.
Exposure to violence leads to chronic disease, mental health, and trauma issues, increased risk of becoming a perpetrator. Prolonged exposure affects the center of the brain that enables decision-making later in life.
Jackson says labeling gun violence and violent crime as a public health issue may make it possible for the city to qualify for federal money to fight the problem. The recognition also makes violence a top funding priority for the city. Indianapolis is dealing with a record number of violent crimes. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Purdue University President Mitch Daniels confirms the school has reached an agreement to return a gift made by Papa John's Pizza founder, Joe Schnattner. Purdue's trustees earlier this month said they would, quote, offer to return the gift the Schnattner Family Foundation had made to endow an internship center within the Krannert School of Management. Daniels says only a portion of the promised $8 million needs to be given back.
Only $1 million of the $8 million had actually been delivered, and it's being returned.
Purdue elected to cut ties with Shatner after the pizza magnate admitted to uttering a racial slur on a conference call with company executives in May, a call designed to mitigate previous comments he'd made, including suggesting black NFL players kneeling before games was costing him money. Though Purdue decided to sever its relationship with Shatner, Ball State University officials chose a different path, saying they will keep the donations the Kentucky businessman has committed to the Muncie campus. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. At the first Indiana Water Summit this week, experts came together to discuss what they can do to protect the state's resources in a changing climate. Democratic State Representative Carrie Hamilton was one of the speakers. She's also part of the newly formed Water Infrastructure Task Force, a group assigned to study the state's water systems and develop a plan to tackle drinking water and wastewater needs in Indiana. Hamilton says all stakeholders need a seat at the table as the state reforms this complex plan.
Whether it be communities that are concerned about providing clean drinking water, to the recreational outdoor industry, to industries that rely on water to make their products, and agriculture, for example.
Agriculture has been one area of concern. Experts at Intera Geoscience and Engineering Solutions say irrigation in Indiana has increased substantially in the last 15 years, taking up more groundwater, the same water used for public drinking water supplies. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. A private religious school's plan to terminate a guidance counselor's job for her marriage to a woman is throwing the state's voucher system into the spotlight once again. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, the school received more than $1.5 million through school vouchers last year.
Last week, Shelley Fitzgerald's superiors at Roncalli High School discovered her marriage to a woman and gave her the option to resign, end her marriage, or be fired. The situation has sparked protests from current and former students. Now, a lawmaker plans to file a bill to withhold state money from voucher schools with discriminatory policies. Democrat Representative Dan Forrestal says it's just the right thing to do.
My goal here is to use the power of the purse, which is what the legislature has at its disposal, to try to get them to act in a morally right way.
Forrestal says the yet-to-be-drafted legislation already has support from one Republican lawmaker. He plans to file it for the next legislative session. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Public health and public safety leaders gathered in Carmel Tuesday to find ways to collaborate to address the opioid epidemic. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports the conference is a chance to share information.
Indiana State Department of Health Commissioner Christina Box says many are responding to the addiction crisis in Indiana.
Where communities are stepping up, and we have the hospitals working with the EMS, working with the local charity organizations there and private practitioners to say, we're not going to let you fall through the cracks.
Chief Counsel for Treatment Alternatives for Safe Communities, Michelle Worobick, gave the keynote speech about collaboration and early intervention. She says groups have to be creative.
How can we piece together what will be something that supports full recovery over the long term, even if that doesn't exist and it's well coordinated yet?
The conference highlighted success stories about stigma reduction, drug courts, jail treatment, and ER follow-up. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Metal detectors are just one of several steps the state and schools are taking to keep kids safe. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, another essential remains. How can teachers prevent or better prepare for the worst-case scenario?
A week before school started in Brown County, class was already in session for this group of educators, law enforcement, and mental health professionals.
Talk about why they're increasing in frequency, the location, and why there's a skewed number of people killed and wounded.
Today's lesson focuses on what to do, like run, hide, or fight, in case of a hostile aggressor, like an active shooter.
That's going to, if the door's locked and it's dark, that the shooter is going to maybe pass our room, and that they're the safest that way.
Kirk Reitzman teaches at Brown County High School. He's describing the intruder training he's received before. In all three districts he's taught in, it's mostly focused on only one of the three parts, the lockdown.
And so we have to be the ones that are protecting the students, and we have to take those measures. And quite honestly, just sitting there and kind of waiting for somebody to come in is not enough to protect them.
So teachers and administrators say more thorough training with the run, hide, fight strategies gives them tools to better protect themselves and their students. It's actually the same type of training used in Noblesville schools, where teacher Jason Seaman tackled a shooter as the student opened fire in his classroom earlier this year. No one died, and the shooter injured only two people, including Seaman.
I want to make it clear that my actions on that day, in my mind, were the only acceptable actions I could have done given the circumstances. I deeply care for my students and their well-being.
It's a hard truth for some to consider the possibility of taking similar actions in their classrooms, but elementary school principal Kelly Bruner says everyone agrees on the bottom line.
It is nerve-wracking to think about that happening, but our number one priority is the safety of the students.
School shootings have spurred a lot of talk about safety this year, mostly to harden up schools. The state has made more money available for schools to amp up security. Some schools have even made moves to offer certain staff access to guns. But educators and other officials have also stressed the importance of another, softer side of safety. In an interview earlier this year, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jennifer McCormick, said mental and behavioral health remains a key part of the conversation.
That whole piece, the whole child well-being piece, we're looking at our systems of care in Indiana. Not all counties are where we need to be, so we're looking at gaps.
Future teachers want to close those gaps, too. Dan Melnick at IU's School of Education says student voice drives professional development events, and students want to focus on what can make them a great teacher and make their schools safer, building relationships.
They understand there is a need for school safety. It's not that they don't feel unsafe right now. It's more that they want to know how to better a school, how to better a situation when they get there.
So as schools lock more doors to keep people safe, educators hope to open others for the same reason. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
A recently released report from the state includes recommendations to improve school safety with mental health as a core theme. The list will help guide legislative priorities for the governor next year. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. We have an opportunity to find out a little ahead of time what is likely to come up this coming weekend. In fact, on August 18th, there'll be dozens and dozens of Northwest Indiana parents getting together at the Arts and Sciences Building at the IU Northwest Campus in Gary to find out more about being able to find some good choices for their students' academic future and success. It's the Northwest Indiana Parent Celebration and Education Expo that is being put on. It's sponsored by the number of groups, in particular with the Indiana Parenting Institute. And with us in the studio, we have a couple representatives of the IPI here. We have Kendra Johnson, who's in the studio, along with Janae Beleza, who we've talked to, of course, before on the program about IPI programs. Thank you, ladies, for being in today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about the ideas behind this upcoming Parent Celebration and the Education Expo. How did it get started? And in turn, I guess the incentive that parents have all across Northwest Indiana to participate this weekend.
Well, the incentive actually came from the young lady sitting next to me, Ms. Kendra Johnson. She's been what I would call a parent advocate in the city of Gary for a while now, and she really wanted to have a conference that focused on education and really helped parents to understand the process, because it's a system, it's a process. And if you want to be successful in it, you have to understand how it operates. And so she came to us asking our assistance, and we said, sure, why not, because we do that. And I had a colleague of mine, Mr. Fred Jackson, who's with the Indiana Commission for Higher Education. They run the 21st Century Scholars Program here. Mm-hmm. And he came saying that they were looking to put on a parent conference. So we came together and decided to do this as a trio. So the main sponsors of it are the Indiana Commission for Higher Education, Indiana University, and we put this under Indiana Parenting Institute's Responsible Parenting Campaign. Basically, what we're doing is we want parents to understand that they have power. If you see on the little flyer that I gave you, it says discover your power, because a lot of times our parents don't feel that they have power. They feel that they just have to accept whatever's thrown at them, and we want them to understand that they have way more power than they're aware of, because we can all have power, right? But if we're unaware of it, then we're powerless. So that's what this conference is about. So some of the topics that we're going to be discussing are the new graduation pathways. Chris, I don't know if you know this, but starting with this year's eighth graders, there are new requirements to graduate, and I would bet that most families aren't aware of that change. And so to have the opportunity to have the Indiana Department of Education be on site to discuss this with families or with parents that are going to be at this event, I think was a huge blessing.
We got a chance to talk with Tony Walker, who's the area representative of the Indiana State Board of Education, and he talked some about the guidelines that are being created, and in fact they're working on more right now, I guess.
So I'm excited that our parents get an opportunity to hear it from the horse's mouth, if you will, and also we wanted them to understand. I serve on the governor's workforce cabinet, and I just learned something that was just very interesting, which is that the role that education plays in ensuring that we become responsible adults, you know, by helping us to understand and to acquire the knowledge and skills that we need to become gainfully employed and then productive members of society. For some reason, I don't think that most of us think of K through 12 that way. And so we wanted parents to understand that there are certain courses that your child needs to take that if they want to go into certain careers. And if you haven't prepared them for those, if you haven't allowed them to take those courses, they end up finding themselves in remediation. So I realize remediation isn't a bad word. It doesn't mean that you're stupid or that you've missed out on something significant. It just means that maybe you didn't take the classes needed to keep moving in the direction that you want to go. So understanding that component, having parents become aware of that and ensure that their child doesn't get caught up in remediation because they want to become some sort of engineer, but they haven't taken those classes in K through 12 required to prepare them for that. They now understand that and how to find those that information so that they can make sure their kids are prepared.
I imagine probably in some cases young people think they might be interested in some career path, and then all of a sudden they discover something else along the way that they said, oh, I like that better.
Right.
But unfortunately, as you say, it's not that they're not physically prepared or mentally prepared for the job. They just don't have all of the educational courses that they might need to be able to follow through on that. I know that since Kendra, you've worked so very hard on this in your opportunities here. What, I guess, gave you the opportunity to get involved with IPI, and in turn, what's gotten you involved to push for such a program like this one coming up?
Well, first of all, I have been a parent of the Gary Community School Corporation for 23 consecutive years. That means for every year of 23 years, I had at least one child in the Gary Community School Corporation. Mm-hmm. And I am the mother of six children, grandmother of seven. I would have been eight, but we lost one. And I was a low-income parent because of a tragedy that was totally unforeseen. And I wanted my children to have better. God bless me with two girls, four boys. And we have had to battle everything from guns to drugs to deaths to, I mean, we've had a lot, bullying. I had one child that was severely bullied. We've gone through a lot. And as a single parent, I wanted other parents to see that it is possible for their children to succeed academically. My oldest daughter, well, both of my daughters have graduated high school and college with degrees. My oldest daughter works for Homeland Security. My second daughter is a regional manager for a well-known furniture store. Mm-hmm. My four boys, the oldest boy lives in Minnesota. He went through, he had learning challenges. and he's done a semester of college. He's working for a corporate office he's trying to be an entrepreneur, but he wants to go back and finish college. My second son has finished his first year of college at IUPUI in Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. He's the one that went through a great deal of bullying. My fifth child just graduated high school, and he was extremely close to the grandson that I lost in a fire. And so it was really, really hard for him to finish these last 2 years because the fire happened in 2016. And my last son, my baby boy, he is a junior at Westside Leadership Academy, and he wants to become an electrical engineer. And, you know, it's amazing when I look back at all of this. I am thankful and grateful to a wonderful woman named Irma Lauderdale, who took the time out to help train me in Title I federal law. But in the process of training me on what my rights and responsibilities were as a parent, I realized that there were other things that came into play that parents didn't know about, how to do an IEP, the laws that are put into place that affect education, and most importantly, the federal law that states parents must be involved in the educational decisions being made for their child. And a lot of parents do not know that. They allow, you know, they feel, well, we'll just give it to the professionals and do what they do. But then when these laws take place and it affects them, they're like, wait a minute, this is wrong. Why are you closing my school? Why are you doing this? And they need to know.
Joining us in the studio here in the conversation is Fred Jackson. He is with the Indiana Commission of Higher Education and represents the 21st Century Scholars Program. Thank you for joining us today, Fred.
Thank you.
What do you get to bring to the table for this big event coming up here in Gary this weekend?
Well, it's a great program that's about to happen this weekend. And with the Indiana Commission for Higher Education with 21st Century Scholars, is to bring awareness about the program. And a lot of parents who are involved in the program really knows about it. But in this area where I cover the Lake County area, that's 10 counties, 120 schools, 15,000 kids, still really don't know the total makeup of the 21st Century Scholars Program. And just to give you something, just really a snippet of it, is that kids who are in the 7th and 8th grade, they can enroll in the 7th and 8th grade, if they stay drug-free, crime-free, and graduate from high school with a 2.5 grade point average, the state of Indiana would pay for 4 years of their college tuition. That's something that I believe parents need to know about. The program has been around for the last 27 years. We have 110,000 kids who are enrolled into the program. We have 75,000 kids who are using the award now, and about 35,000 kids who have graduated from college by using the 21st Century Scholars Program. So it's a benefit, I think, that will be added to the parents to help them pay for school, and it's an income-qualified-based program. But there are hundreds of scholarships that are out there to help kids to pay for their college tuition.
Do you think it's a case where they just say not enough parents or students, for that matter, know that much about the program to take advantage of it, especially if they're out there, among other things, struggling to be able to bring in enough money to put a young person through school? Pardon me, through school.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we do and what we have had great success in the past, we have developed a parent component, and that will keep parents aware of what is happening with the program, and also to help them navigate through the process. However, at that time, there was a paper application, and some counselors didn't complete the application or submit the application to the state office. Now the responsibility is on the parents. So now they can go online to scholars.in.gov and fill out the application. Also create a scholar track account that will keep them abreast of what is out there and what's new with the 21st Century Scholars Program. And so they can be engaged as well with their child in the scholars program to make sure they are taken care of. You know. the program.
Is this kind of program that's coming up this weekend in Gary very unique? Are there others that you're aware of around the state, or is this something that's just kind of been started here, and we're seeing how it goes in Northwest Indiana?
This is unique. This is going to be a unique program all by itself because of what is offering. Opportunity for parents to be indoctrinated what's going on the scene with Department of Education and also with the CHE, also the things which they need to know to help them this school semester to make sure their kids are in the right place at the right time, to empower them in a way that where I'll just add this piece in it, that with the state that you can go back not only to help our kids to get to college, but also to put their parents in the same lane. So their parents who would like to go back to school and have started college but didn't complete, you can go back, will help them to achieve that, to get their degree as well.
So you're talking about basically a student of any age, I suppose. It can be a young person or it can be a grown-up.
Yes. Yes.
It's interesting. Janae, let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts about this coming weekend's event. We're of course, focusing in on the Northwest Indiana Parents Celebration and Education Expo that's going to happen at the Arts and Sciences Building on the IU Northwest campus mm-hmm. this weekend. Tell us about some of the things that will happen during the weekend and about the people that are helping make it possible.
Awesome. It starts at 8 a.m. Registration's from 8 to 9, and then the event begins. We're going to make every effort to make it fun because we want parents to enjoy the process of their kids becoming educated as well as themselves, as Fred just said. So we're having breakout sessions where they have the opportunity to learn these different to get this information that they need to navigate the system much better. I think a lot of people think that the education system is difficult. A lot of times I feel victims of it. But understanding how it works gives you so much power. That's the tagline that we have for Discover Your Power during this event. There's going to be a Q&A afterwards. There's going to be giveaways. We have a raffle crew, we call them, that comes in and does giveaways at the end of each breakout session, and they're going to make it really fun and silly. And then for lunch, instead of being stuck inside all day, Merrim Health Center is doing their Power of Healthy Families Health Fest from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. But our folks are going to be doing, our attendees are able to be a part of it from 11:45 to 1 for their lunch. Mm-hmm. And it's in Lot 9, which is literally half a block away from the Arts and Sciences Building, which is where we'll be having our event. It's completely free. Everything's free, so please come out. There's lots of giveaways. The raffles include uniform vouchers, but there's other stuff that we're raffling off, too, that I cannot tell you. In fact, I was told if I tell you that they will take it back. So it's that good. So I can't tell you.
And it's just good wise to be there. You know, right. Have the opportunity to be there. All right. If you're interested in participating in this, I guess they do as RSVP so that they know you're coming. And tell us more about that.
Right. We ask that you RSVP just because we are limited in the number of folks that we can serve this time. So if this is a success, then Fred and I were discussing that there is state interest in it. And if this is successful, they would like to replicate this concept throughout the state. So we would like to see it become successful. So we're starting. So we're like the pilot. So we're asking for no more than 300 parents at this time, so we are limited. So we're asking you to RSVP either at 219-886-1111. I'll repeat that. It's 219-886-1111. Or if you go on Eventbrite and search for the NWI Parent Celebration and Education Expo, you can register there as well. If you'll let me, Chris, I'd like to just thank our partners, because like you were saying earlier, there's a bunch of people that are part of making this the success that we're mm-hmm. hopeful that it'll be. So I already spoke of Indiana Commission for Higher Education, Indiana University, Indiana Parenting Institute's Responsible Parenting Campaign, Ivy Tech, Foundations of East Chicago, the Institute for Quality Education, Oak Street Health, NIPSCO, Work One, and Councilman at Large Herb Smith from Gary, and Gary Councilwoman Rebecca Wyatt. I want to thank all of them for their contributions to ensuring that this is going to be the success that we know it's going to be.
I was just thinking, Fred, if this weekend turns out to be a success, can you imagine what this might be like to have something similar like this in Indianapolis?
Yes, I think this it can spread out and really benefit the parents and students as well. This is something I think that is going to be, you know, epic. It's going to be huge, you know, and especially focusing on education, which we really need to begin to focus in on, especially for the next generation, and with next level jobs and next gen and the jobs and how the market is changing. We need to empower our kids with every tool that they can receive and put in their tool chest to make it happen.
May I throw something at you, Chris?
Sure.
Just, this is, and this will be the last thing that I say, that this event is not about giving parents information, but rather providing them with the understanding needed to make that knowledge work for them and their families. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's all helpful, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be something that's on a piece of paper.
Right.
It'd just be an idea, and that's a great opportunity to bring it up this weekend, to be sure, don't you think, Kendra?
Yes, definitely. And if anybody else would still, if any other companies or businesses would like to donate to this event as well, they are welcome, and we will make sure that they are totally acknowledged for their participation in this, because this is not just for Gary, Indiana. It is for Hammond, Griffith, East Chicago, all of Northwest Indiana. But the thing is, you got to call in, you got to reserve.
That's Kendra Jackson, excuse me.
Johnson.
And then, Sir Johnson, I'm thinking Fred Jackson. Excuse me, my name's right here. Fred is with the Indiana Commission of Higher Education, and he represents the 21st Century Scholars Program. And as we mentioned, Kendra Johnson, as well as Janae Beleza, who is with the Indiana Parenting Institute. Once again, this is an event coming up on August 18th. It's the annual Northwest Indiana Parent Celebration and Education Expo, and it'll be held at the Arts and Sciences Building on the IU Northwest campus in Gary. And as you say, if you're interested, RSVP right away, and you can do so either on Eventbrite by looking up the Northwest Indiana Parent Celebration title, or you can call 219-886-1111 for more information. And thank you all for coming in the studio to talk about today.
And thank you for having us.
Thanks, Chris.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.